You know, when you start thinking about Bible personalities, a long list probably just goes through your mind. Who is the great Bible personalities? And no doubt as you think about the men who has molded the book that we read in the lives that they lived, probably one of the first ones that stand out is the man Moses. And you think about this man and, oh, what a life he had. Think how it began and then you think of how it ended and then all of the things that happened in between. And you have to say to yourself, wow, what a life. I mean, here is a man who began his life at the threat of death as a baby when Pharaoh was killing all of the newborn males in Egypt. And then he went from there to the splendors of Egypt as the grandson of Pharaoh himself. We think of him maybe as a shepherd in the wilderness. And then he goes into Sinai and has incredible meetings face to face with God. Goes from 40 years from leading a nomadic group of people through the desert to bringing in to the entrance of the promised land. Here was a man who had done all of that and much more in between. And you think about the greatness of this man and what he was able to accomplish with the help of God and to bring out the children of Israel from Egypt and to give them the promised land and to allow them to become the people that God had wanted them to be. And you think about how it all started. And you can go back to Exodus chapter 1 and we see the beginning of Moses actually began with his parents. Because had it not been for the great faith of his parents, Moses could not have existed. We are told in Exodus chapter 1 and verse 20, verse 22 through chapter 2 and verse 4 that Moses' parents had a tremendous faith in God. A greater faith in God than they did in Pharaoh. We read beginning in verse 22, "So Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, every son who is born to you, born, you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. And a man of the house of Levi went and took as wife the daughter of Levi. So the woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was a beautiful child, she hid him 3 months. But when she could no longer hide him, she took an ark of bulrushes for him, daubed it with asphalt and pitch, put the child in it, and laid it in the reeds by the river's bank. And his sister stood afar off to know what would be done to him." Now, you know, today if a couple of parents took their child, put him in a basket and set him afloat on the river, they'd probably be put in a little rubber room somewhere. But this was great faith on the part of Moses' parents. You see, they had a conviction that conflicted with conviction or custom or practice of the day. See, the practice of the day was the command of Pharaoh that these newborn babes be killed. But their conviction prevailed as they hid him and as they took what risk was necessary to keep them alive. You know, we know very little about Moses' parents. We do know that they were of the Levi tribe. And we do have an example of their faith in the faith chapter of Hebrews chapter 11, verse 23, where it says, "By faith Moses, when he was born, he was hidden 3 months by his parents because they saw that he was a beautiful child, and they were not afraid of the king's command." We also know from Exodus chapter 2 that after Moses was found by Pharaoh's daughter, it was arranged by his sister that Moses' mother become his nurse. So Moses had the privilege of still having his mother's care, even though he lived in the house of Pharaoh. And he also had the privilege of having Hebrew instruction from his mother, to know of his heritage, to know that he was a Hebrew. And you know, this is something that was very important to him, that he understood who he was. And I don't mean so that he can boast of his name and boast of his background and boast of his heritage. You know, we all know people like that who boast of who they are because of the name that they carry and maybe what their family has done in the past and their position and their stature in life. You know, some of you may remember the comedy in the 60s, Gilligan's Island. Do y'all remember Thurston Howell III? Yeah. You know, he always looked down on all the other castaways for the simple reason he was wealthy. And he was constantly reminding people that I'm Thurston Howell III and I have great money, and yet he was in the same boat as the rest of them were. And every now and then in some of the episodes, his wife, which was a dingbat, really, and was called so on many occasions, would do something silly and he would say, "Lovey, remember yourself. You're a Howell." And so he wanted everybody to know that name and then how important it was. Or maybe you remember Charles Emerson Winchester III from MASH. And he made no bones about it in this show. He was better than everyone else there and he wanted them to know it. That ain't what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the importance of a person in that way. These people are so misinformed of what important things are in life. Well, we all know people like that. There really are people like that in life. But you know, I have to tell you, I've never met anyone better than me. Now, let me explain myself. I know a lot of people who have more money than I do. In fact, most people do. I know people who are better educated than I am. And I know people who have climbed higher on the ladder of success than I have or ever will. But you know, these things don't make a person better than someone else. For you see, we are all equal in the eyes of the Creator. From the bum in the slum to the man with a mansion on a hill. In God's eyes, we are all equal in every way. So you see, in heaven, there's not going to be any upper class, middle class, lower class. In heaven, there will be no racial differences. There will be no ethnic groups. There will be no bad side of town. There will be no other side of the railroad tracks. For we will all be the same. So what I mean by knowing who he was, being significant, what I mean is that he knew that he was of God. He was a part of God's family. In 1 Chronicles chapter 23, verse 14, when King David was separating the sons of Israel, he said, "Now the sons of Moses, the man of God, were reckoned to the tribe of Levi." He made it a point to mention, when he mentioned Moses' name, Moses was a man of God. That was the significant thing about Moses. He was of God. Moses, the man of God, was a tribute to God, and he was actually a tribute to his parents who taught him who he was. That's why it is significant for Moses to know who he was. And that's one of the things that made him great, because he was a person of God. Another lesson from Moses is that we can learn is that there are some places that God's people do not belong. In Hebrews chapter 11, beginning with verse 24, we read that Moses had a choice to make about his life. It says, "By faith Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward." Now, you know, when we read this passage of Scripture, we have to draw this conclusion. Moses couldn't have it both ways. He couldn't follow God and be a good Egyptian. And he couldn't be a good Egyptian and follow God. You see, everything that was Egyptian was counter to God. and the righteousness of God. Take note of something that was said in Joshua 24 and verse 14. Joshua is speaking here to the children of Israel. He says, "Now therefore fear the Lord and serve Him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. Serve the Lord." You need to make up your mind as to whether or not you are going to serve God or you are going to serve someone or something else. And this was the decision that Moses had to make. And of course, as we read in Hebrews chapter 11, he obviously made the right choice. And I want to tell you today, my friends, we have to make the same choice. We have to choose in life who we are going to serve. Is it going to be God, or is it going to be someone or something else? We have to make a decision about what we're going to do with our profession, if our profession can be a godly profession. Does your profession allow you to be a Christian? You know, some professions don't. In other words, they expect you to be right the opposite than a Christian to carry out certain jobs. I never will forget, and this was the year of 1998, I had just been released from Motorola, who closed its doors in Huntsville. So I hit the trail looking for work. And I went to a very major electronic builder and distributor called LG. Y'all know LG? Yeah, I have one sitting in my living room. LG is in Huntsville, Alabama, is one of the major manufacturers of the TVs, then and now today. So I went there to interview for a job. And this was the job. I was to be an investigator. I was to go into other companies like RCA and Philips, Westinghouse, and different, and pretend to be one of them. To see how they did their job. To see the works that they did. To see their designs, their way of building. And then I was to come back and tell LG everything about them. The only thing was that if I was caught and it was known that I was actually a part of LG, LG would disavow any knowledge of me whatsoever. I said, "Oh, you mean like James Bond?" That made the man mad when I said that. I said, "No, I don't want a job like this. Before I walk into a place and deceive everybody that's around me of who I am and what I'm doing just so I can steal plans and steal ideas from other companies." So I walked away from that job because I couldn't do that job and be a Christian. What about your profession? Does it allow you to be a Christian? What about your recreation? Does your recreation allow you be a Christian? Does your recreation allow you to, whether you participate in it or just watch it, does it allow you to be a Christian? You know what's trending now at football games? Not football. Now it's tailgating. We all know about tailgating. I don't know if we have anybody here that's ever tailgated before. But in some places where you tailgate, it's nothing more than to drink and carouse. The newest thing on the market, I don't know if you've seen this or not, I saw a video on this the other day, and it just blew my mind. Now the thing is that you take a big funnel, and when I say a big funnel, I'm talking about a funnel that is about the size of a 5-gallon bucket. And it's about this big around, and it's a big bucket-looking thing, and then it tapers down to the funnel point. Okay? Now you take a piece of a platform, either a wooden platform or a plastic platform, and you line up bottles of beer in a circle. And then you take this big funnel and you sit over all of these bottles of beer. And then you pick up the whole thing and you turn it upside down where all the beer runs into the snout of that funnel, and you put that funnel in your mouth and you guzzle down as much of it as you possibly can before you pass out or fall out or drop it or whatever. And you would be amazed watching these people do that. But that's the new trending thing at football games. This was done at the National Championship college football game just a few weeks ago. because that's where the video came from. Can you imagine that? Folks, you can't do that and be a Christian. What about entertainment? What about TV? You know, you used to be able to take your kids to the movie or sit them in the living room and turn the television on, and you didn't have to worry about them seeing any kind of filth whatsoever. My friends, today you can't even turn on TV Land, which is supposed to be a family channel, without seeing explicit sexual activity on the screen. You can't even roll the windows of your car down driving down the street of Albany, Georgia, without hearing some kind of filth and foul coming out of the car next to you. And you all know what I mean because you've all heard it. Can you do that and be a Christian? No. No, you can't. We need to remember what Paul told the Christians in Corinth. 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 14. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? And what communion has light with darkness? And what accord has Christ with Belial? Or what part has the believer with an unbeliever? And what agreement has the temple of God with idols? Moses, you can't have it both ways. You've got to give one of them up. We also need to remember what he said in chapter 7 and verse 1. Therefore, having these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. This is why we need to be careful about what we do, how we spend our time, even in recreation and entertainment. Because some of these things can compromise your Christianity. Another thing that we can learn from Moses is that we need to think things through. You know, Moses had instant gratification as a person in the house of Pharaoh. It didn't matter what it was. If he wanted it, it was his. All he had to do was say the spoken word and it would be taken care of. His wants, his desires were immediately fulfilled. Now who wouldn't want that in life? Who wouldn't want everything and to have it when they wanted it, how they wanted it, any time they wanted it? Wouldn't that be a great life? Would it? He could have stayed in Egypt and have material want and power that would have been unequaled in the world. But you know, Moses did something that's quite unique. He looked beyond instant gratification. By faith, he forsook Egypt, according to Hebrews 11:26, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible, and that him. So he made the right choice. You know, life will sometimes cause us to take immediate gratification, to look for an easy way out. But we need to think things through, because thinking things through is such a wise decision. And I know that we have all made impulsive decisions before, haven't we? Every one of us have probably done that. And many times we have probably lived to regret making these impulsive decisions. But you know, it's something so easy. It allows you to get your hands on something that is so pretty. The only problem is many times these things aren't real. And many times they are not worth what we thought they would be worth in life. We need to know that for forfeiting earth's pleasures, that we can be whole, that we can remain untouched and unharmed by the world's way. It's like Solomon said in Proverbs 4:26, ponder the path of your feet and let all of your ways be established. In other words, watch where you're going. See where that footstep drops. Pay attention to it. Has anybody ever been walking and then all of a sudden you're ready to take that next step and you see danger and you pull yourself back? Have you ever had to do that? Yeah. Whether it be a hole, whether it be a rock, whether it be something that will make you stumble. We've all had to do that. So we have to be careful about that. Think it through. And then finally, we need to learn the lesson of the dangers of anger. In Numbers chapter 20, the children of Israel are thirsty. Now the children of Israel have been thirsty before, and God has given them water. And this will be the second time that God has brought them water through the rock. On the first occasion, God told Moses to strike the rock and water would come forth, and he did, and the water came. On this occasion, however, God tells Moses to speak to the rock and water will come forth. And for some reason or another, Moses' patience has been tested. And as we read this account, we find that Moses is irritated and he is angry with the children of Israel. And he says, "See, must I fetch you water from this rock?" And he takes his rod and he smokes that rock. And God, knowing the people were thirsty, allowed water to come on out anyway. But Moses has disobeyed God. And listen to verse 12. "Because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given to them." Just like that. 40 years of anticipation. 40 years of leading the people through the wilderness, getting them out of these traps, providing for them, caring for them, directing them, taking care of their problems. It's all gone. He don't get to go in. A moment's recklessness, my friends, can be very costly. But yet so many people live by their emotions. And they behave in ways that do not glorify God. Because this is exactly what Moses did. He did this in a way that did not glorify God. And my friends, when you do that, there is usually a high price to pay. And this is why Peter put into his list of Christian attributes in 2 Peter chapter 1, things such as temperance, self-control, because we need to be in control of our lives. And if we lose control, we can find ourselves standing in the same shoes of Moses as he did here. You know, even though he made mistakes, we look at Moses as a great man. We look at Moses as a man who listened to God, as a man who did his bidding. He suffered much for God in leading the children of Israel. He went through many things. I think he was a man who was careful about his life. And I think that Moses was a man who pointed the world to Christ. We need to learn some of his valuable lessons today. We need to give up the world. We need to realize that God is the one that we really need. And we need to view our life and review our life to be sure that we are living our life in God, in harmony with God's will. So my question tonight to you is this. Is your life in harmony with God's will? If not, Christian friend, whatever changes you need to make, make them to bring your life back to the Lord. Tonight, if you are not a Christian, obey His Word. Put your life in His hands. Make the right choice and choose God over the world. Tonight, if you need to respond to the invitation, please come while we stand and sing.